The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
With the start of the free agency negotiating period just a few days away, there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the New York Giants. Ed Valentine of Big Blue View here with the latest edition of the Valentine's Views podcast. Please like, share, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts across the Big Blue View radio network. All right, on Thursday, several news items about the Giants and that impact free agency and could impact the upcoming 2024 NFL draft came out. The first of those was about safety Xavier McKinney. Giants didn't use a franchise or transition tag on McKinney the other day, but McKinney said on Thursday on the Kay Adams show, on the what's called the Up and Adams show with Kay Adams, said that he does want to be a Giant, said he's had talks with the Giants, said they're trying to figure something out. His direct quote was, "I do want to be a Giant, but it still has to make sense at the end of the day. The money has to make sense and everything else has to make sense." So McKinney and the Giants, McKinney, obviously, 24-year-old safety, a player Joe Shane said he wants to keep. McKinney not closing the door on the Giants, but obviously right now, whatever talks have gone on between McKinney and his representatives and the Giants would lead you to believe that the two sides are pretty far apart in terms of the financial value that they're placing on McKinney in terms of how they see the player. Working in the Giants' favor is the fact that the free agent safety market seems to be overrun with quality players. This week, the Buffalo Bills cut Jordan Poyer. The Denver Broncos released Pro Bowl safety Justin Simmons. There's a lot of good players on the safety market. That's probably going to lead to a depressed market in terms of price tag. So maybe if McKinney gets to free agency, gets to the negotiating period, when that begins on Monday, the 13th of March, maybe he's going to find out that the kind of offers he's looking for aren't out there in free agency, and maybe that increases the chances of him coming back to the Giants. There was also a report on Thursday that the Philadelphia Eagles, the arch rival, hated Philadelphia Eagles, might take a swing at Saquon Barkley in free agency. No surprise that the Eagles would be interested in Barkley. They're likely losing DeAndre Swift, their running back, in free agency. Eagles are a team built to win right now, feel like they're ready to win right now. They were in the Super Bowl in 2022. And a playoff team, obviously, in 2023. The Eagles have a good offensive line. They have a good offense. And it would be a good landing spot for Barkley. It would be one that Giants fans would have a hard time dealing with because they'd have to watch Saquon play against the Giants twice a year. But it would make sense. And the Eagles along with the NFC East rival Dallas Cowboys, are teams that do seem like logical landing spots for Saquon. We've talked about those two teams. We've talked about the Houston Texans. We've talked about the Baltimore Ravens. We've talked about the Los Angeles Chargers, who have already expressed interest in Saquon, at least reportedly expressed interest in Saquon, in what should be a run-heavy offense under Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers. So we'll see what happens there. Pretty much at this point, 50-50, 60-40 chance that Saquon returns to the Giants, maybe 50%, maybe a little bit less than that. Still an opportunity. I think there's still some desire on Saquon's part to stay with the Giants, to have a legacy with the Giants, to finish what he's tried to start with the Giants. But that may not happen. If there's a an offer out there that Saquon gets that the Giants aren't willing to compete with, aren't willing to entertain, then Saquon is going to have the right to take that. And whether it's with Dallas or Philadelphia or whoever, that's his right. He's not going to say, oh, the Eagles were an arch rival of the Giants, I'm not going to go there. He's going to do what's best for Saquon Barkley. And we'll find out what that is here in the coming days. The other news item worth touching on, Dan Duggan of The Athletic caught up with Giants tight end Darren Waller this week. We learned a few days ago that Waller was considering retiring. We know that 2023 was the third straight year that Waller, who's now 31 and will be 32, entering the 2024 season. We learned that Waller was considering retiring from the NFL after three straight years that were interrupted by hamstring injuries, by leg injuries. And we learned that he was undecided. Duggan caught up with Waller, who said he remains undecided, isn't sure, you know, when he will make a decision, says he hopes to do that pretty soon, although he won't have a decision by the beginning of free agency. And Waller basically said that it's not necessarily the injuries, although there is some frustration there. He said that basically his decision is whether or not he can continue to be fully committed to what it takes to be a quality NFL player. Waller, honestly, you know, as I said, he'll be 32. He's got other interests in his life. He's starting a music career. He's made plenty of money in the NFL. He's made more than $40 million. He's well off. His new wife plays for the WNBA Las Vegas. I can't even think of the name of the team out there in Las Vegas, but she's playing for the WNBA team in Las Vegas. And, you know, that can't be easy to be basically across the country from your new bride. So Waller has a lot going on, a lot of things to consider, and we'll see what he does. But that leaves the Giants in a bit of a conundrum here entering free agency, entering the draft. They probably already had to supplement the tight end position, and now that becomes even more of a priority, probably one they really didn't want to have to deal with or really didn't want to push up the priority list with a lot of other things going on. But they may have to, considering whatever decision Waller makes. Giants fans, you guys also know that one of the things that I've tried to do here as we lead up to the 2024 NFL draft is do some interviews with NFL draft prospects, help you guys get to know some of the young men, you know, who are preparing and hoping to have their names called here at the end of April, you know, in the draft. And coming up here next, I have for you an interview that I did with Stanford place kicker Josh Carty. So hopefully you guys enjoy that interview. enjoyed speaking to the young man. So let's play that now, and hopefully you guys enjoy it. Giants fans, as we continue to get closer and closer to the 2024 NFL draft, I'm trying as often as I can to bring you interviews with some of the 2024 NFL draft prospects, give you a chance to get to know some of these guys, first round picks, seventh round picks, positions of quarterbacks, kickers, no matter what, I'm trying to get you guys to opportunities to know as many of these guys as possible. And today I'm joined by Stanford place kicker, Josh Cardy. Josh, thank you very, very much for a few minutes.
Thanks so much for having me. Nice to meet you.
Hey, you as well. So tell me a little bit, quickly. Let me just start with this. When I look at it, there's a database called NFL Mock Draft Database, and it sort of ranks, players where they might get drafted or what the interest level is in guys at this point. And when I peek at that database, it shows you right now as the only place kicker likely to be drafted. How much would that mean to you, not only to get drafted, but to be the only place kicker, who had his name called, this April?
Yeah, that would definitely be an honor. Definitely rooting for my other guys. Hopefully there's more than one kicker drafted this year. That would make, that'd be good for the brand, good for the kicking brand, and be probably better for myself too. If there's more kickers drafted, there's going to be kickers drafted in higher rounds, hopefully. But yeah, I mean, if I were the only guy, there would definitely be either way, it would be a dream come true of being drafted, and it'd be a huge honor, and definitely would be, an even bigger honor being the absolute only guy.
I'm just curious, when did you realize that you had this skill, and when did you start thinking about the NFL?
Definitely. So most kickers usually come from a soccer background, and I was one of those guys. My friend in high school, he was trying out for the high school football team, and I went out to a field with him 2 weeks before freshman year, so in the summer. And he said, hey, you should kick a football at the end of the workout that we were doing. And he showed me exactly what to do. We pulled up a YouTube video of how to kick a football. I had no idea. I'd watched, maybe the national championship games, and I had watched Stanford and Oregon games growing up, but I really didn't know much going on about football as a whole. And he told me what to do. Hey, three steps back, two steps to the left. I made a 30 yarder on the first try, 40 yarder on the first try, and then a 45 on the first try. I almost made a 50. And then he's like, hey, you should try out for the football team. And it actually kind of took a lot of convincing for my parents and then also for myself, because I was a pretty serious soccer player. Probably would have ended up at Duke, maybe Stanford, for soccer, playing collegiate soccer. So I was pretty serious about that, but he convinced my whole family to make the switch to football, especially after we found out that, you can have a career in kicking a football through two yellow pipes and, hopefully make a lot of money.
You, at this point, you have any regrets? You miss soccer at all?
No regrets. The only thing I miss about soccer is, I was in pretty good shape cardiovascularly, but, a lot of running. A lot of people don't like the running in soccer. I kind of did. But I definitely get that in on my own. But honestly, as a whole, don't miss soccer much at all.
No, my son was a college goalkeeper. He didn't like the running.
Yeah.
So
figures.
They don't have to run much.
Where was he a player?
He played at a D3 school in upstate New York, but yeah, he didn't like the running very much, but so goalkeeper was a good place for him.
Sweet. Yeah.
I'm curious, this the process, you know, for a lot of guys, I like to ask them about the pre-draft process, the Senior Bowl, the combine. I know you had an opportunity in both of those places. I mean, what is this process like for you? And just from what you can see in terms of, you know, some of the position guys, you know, the offensive, defensive guys, how much different is it for you, you know, than it might be for some of those guys?
Yeah, so I think in general, the biggest difference is the specialists haven't gotten much attention for as far as like interviews go compared to, you know, the quarterbacks, you know, running backs, all the other positional players, really. We have gone a little bit under the radar at both those events, the Senior Bowl and the Combine. A couple interviews for the specs here and there, but for a large part, I'd say it's pretty similar as a whole. Like, we do the same, you know, same practice schedule, same workouts, medical at all the two events. But definitely there's, you know, we're kickers. They focus on other positional players still a lot more than us. And so that's probably the only main difference.
But it's not like you go through all of that, but it's not like you can impress guys with how fast you run or how high you jump and all that stuff. It's not like that really matters to most NFL teams. What matters is whether you can put the ball between the uprights.
And that's the biggest and fastest kicker, but yeah, they don't really care about that. I don't think any of the kickers or punters ran or did any of the other events at the combine. I was pretty intrigued to try and do the bench press, but coming off of a collarbone injury, just didn't think it was the best idea for myself.
No,
but it would have been a lot of fun to do all those events.
But that makes, during the pre-draft process, that makes it kind of difficult for you, you know, I would think, to really make an impression on an NFL team. You know, I'm sure that when it comes to kickers, they'd like to judge, you know, what guys are like and what they think about when they kick, and they'd like to judge some of that. But the pre-draft process is kind of difficult for you guys to make an impression on a team, isn't it?
I think that comes partly because I think most of their analysis on the kickers can be done through our stats compared to other positions. Like, a 50-yard field goal at Stanford is the same as a 50-yard field goal at any other place. Same yards, same uprights. You don't play necessarily against an opponent as a kicker. You have your snapper and holder and the guys blocking for you. But it's the same situation, same scenario. So the stats really tell a lot of the story by themselves. So I think what they're really looking for in the pre-draft process is they want to see you kick in person. They want to make sure that your form, your technique, and the sound of the ball coming off your foot, how high the ball goes, how far the ball goes, you know, how straight the ball goes. Make sure that all checks out and that it kind of wasn't like a fluke, I would say, mm-hmm. that you did well. Although if you had multiple seasons to back it up, it's probably not a fluke anyway. But just they want to see it in person like they do with any athlete, like how a quarterback throws or how someone's feet, how someone's footwork is. They want to see just what it's like in person. They can get impressed by ball height and, you know, how far you can kick and stuff.
I want to ask you about something you just mentioned, you know, and I got thinking about, you know, playing golf or playing baseball. There's a certain way that the ball sounds. There's a certain way that it feels, you know, when you hit it right versus when you don't hit it right. What's it sound like when you hit it right?
Yeah, so I would say it's definitely more of like a boom than versus like a slap. Mm-hmm. I'd say if you have the farther a kicker can usually kick the ball, it's more of a deeper kind of explosion sound versus mm-hmm. more, you know, if you hit it with your toe, then it's more of like a slap kind of mm-hmm. hit. It's the same as in golf. If you golf, it's kind of like if you make perfect connection, then you kind of don't really feel the contact. That's a weird way to put it. It's like flush. If you hit the perfect contact, it's just flush, really smooth. It's kind of the same way with kicking. Is if you make the perfect contact, it's nice and flush off your foot.
No, I understand where you're going with that though, because I do play golf, and let's just say that most of my shots are not flush. But when you do hit one, it's like you don't even feel it. You don't feel anything other than the sound that you hear. So it's kind of similar to that.
Yeah. I would say so. Yeah. I'm not much of a good golfer myself. But I would agree.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, you mentioned the injury. Last play of your college career. Last play of your college career, you break a collarbone after, I think it's, would you get a, you got a kick blocked against Notre Dame and you go to try to make a tackle. I mean, how many times have you had to explain this and how much grief have you taken for this on the final play of your career?
Yeah, you know, right now I can kind of look back and laugh at it, but in the moment it was definitely really, really sad story about, like, you know, ending my college career. All things considered, it happened in the perfect timing of the season. Like, I only missed, you know, half of a quarter because of it, not any full games or anything. And so I was able to take time off, get the surgery, and bounce back within about a month, just in time for training for the Senior Bowl and stuff. So it's all good now. NFL coaches, scouts or whatever, NFL clubs, I don't really care about collarbone injuries as a whole, just because, you know, normally you heal it up and then it should never break again with all the screws and plates in place. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely really sad. I've had to explain it a lot. You know, it was a 56 yarder. I just made a 56 yarder right before that and just tried to drive the ball a little bit too much. They got a couple yards of penetration, timed it pretty well. And it was just kind of a, you know, unlucky kind of series of events. Learned a lot from it, though. So I think definitely better to learn from it at the college level than at the NFL level.
So what's the longest kick you've made? I think from what I saw, the longest kick is 61.
Yes, sir.
Is that right, in a game?
Yes, sir.
What's how far do you feel comfortable? How far do you think, you know, what do you think, you know, could you get to 65, 66?
I think so. If you give me or any other kicker in the NFL, like, tornado conditions, we could back it up to whatever, you know, 75, 80 yards. But on a day with no wind, so if we're like in an indoor facility or something, which I never really have kicked in an indoor facility before because we don't have one at Stanford. It's usually pretty sunny and nice outside, but not always. Indoor facility, I could probably feel comfortable getting distance for 65 just about every time, I would say. Just okay. If I hit it perfectly, then I think I can make a 70 indoors.
Nice. Got to ask you, the other thing that I saw, your career at Stanford, you made 72 out of 73 point afters. So I got to ask you, what the heck happened on the one that you missed, and how much does that one bug you?
Yeah, that one bugs me a lot because it ruined my perfect season 2 years ago. I was 18 for 18 in field goals and then ended up missing the last point after touchdown attempt of the year. Our long snapper got hurt in game 11 against Cal. Mm-hmm. And we had our backup was also hurt already. So we had a fullback snapping for the remainder of the season, and which was a game and a half, including the 61 yarder was with him. My first operation with him ever, practice or a game, was a 61 yarder at the end of that game. So it was, you know, a lot of things going, a lot of variables and stuff. So next game, so the snapper, he false started on the extra point by like shifting the ball around just because, you know, I hadn't had too much experience and stuff. So backed up five. And I messed up a little bit with my routine. I have to make sure that when I was going with the operation with him, I have to delay my start by about a tenth of a second just to give the snapper and holder some extra time to get the ball down, get the ball situated, just because, you know, it's a fullback snapping, not a long snapper. And so I forgot in that one kick, went back to my regular timing. And basically, I got there and the ball was late just because I forgot to do that mental check and then just kind of pulled it. So yeah, definitely bugs me a lot because it ruined a perfect season. But that was the reasoning behind that miss. And in general, I have a lot of analysis of a lot of different kicks that I can talk about for ages.
But so blame the long snapper. There you go. But
no.
It was my
mental check.
No, but what it
my mental was, check for not doing it.
I was going to say is what it points to is just, you know, how much you guys as an operation, what they always call the operation in the NFL between the kicker, the snapper, and the holder, just how much you guys all depend on each other.
Yeah, definitely tight-knit relationship, and we spend a lot of time with each other. And the more time you spend with each other, the more comfortable you get. Definitely made a great first impression with the long snapper that came in, the fullback, by hitting. Mm-hmm. We had 61, 54, and 35, I think, in that game and a half. And they were all good operations. But, yeah, it's just a little tougher. Got to lock in a little bit more the next time that happens. Sorry, I think I got to run. Not sure. I think we're supposed to go to 12:15, right?
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah. All right. I just had one more thing for you, but that's all right. We'll.
If it's real quick, I can answer you.
No, it's good. I'll just edit this part out, and that's fine. I didn't know you had a time limit. So, all right.
Sorry. Yeah.
All right.
I was told 12 to 12:15, so I was a minute late. So I.
Okay. No problem. No problem. All right. Appreciate it, and good luck to you. All right. Yep. Bye bye.
Appreciate it so much.
Yep. Bye bye. And that's our show for today, Giants fans. Please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.